And welcome to Fire Away, our monthly Q&A show focused on the employment law issues that are important to you. My name is Stuart Rudner. I'm an employment lawyer and mediator and also the host of Fire Away. We broadcast every month. In fact, it's the third Tuesday of the month. And of course, you can see all past episodes on our Facebook page as well as on YouTube. And as a reminder, if you like the show, subscribe to our YouTube channel. Like our Facebook page, and then you'll get notifications about upcoming shows, as well as other events that are and information in the employment law world. So today, for our third episode of Fire Away, I'm joined by Claire Pressman. Claire is the principal of References and More Services, and Claire and I will be talking about reference checks in the modern workplace, how they're relevant, how to do them, and what you can do to make sure that they're used effectively without getting yourself into trouble. I'll remind everyone that if you have any questions, we'd be happy to answer them. So please post them either as a comment on Facebook or by tweeting to @RudnerLaw. So Claire, hello, and thanks very much for joining me on Fire Away.
Hi, Stuart. Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
Very excited to have you here. And as we'll hear a little bit more about this later, but this is the second time I've had the pleasure of interviewing you. The last time was 8 years ago now. Welcome back. So we're going to talk about references, and I'll start with a very general question. It's 2018. I've had people say to me that references don't really matter. Letters of references are irrelevant. As someone who deals with them day in and day out, what do you think is the relevance of references in the modern workplace?
You know, in my opinion, references is as relevant today as they always were. It's the final step in the recruitment process, and it's one that's missed and skipped way too often. If you're hiring and had the opportunity to find out if your candidate, learn how your candidate has performed in the past, how they might react to a crisis situation or conflict, how they work in a team, wouldn't you want to do that?
Absolutely, I would. So on that note, how can employers ensure they're getting the best information when they do a reference check?
Good question. First of all, you have to start off with the signed authorization form. But what you should be doing is you should be asking open-ended questions. You should not be afraid to probe. So for example, we have a grid component on our reference form, on one of our reference forms. So if I were doing a reference for you, for example, and I asked the referee, can you rate on a scale of 1 to 10 Stuart's time management skills? And they said to me, 7, where 7 is an above average rating, but there's room for improvements. I might say something like, okay, 7 is an above average, so Stuart does have some good time management skills, but there's room for improvements. How could he get closer to that 10? You need to be respectful, but you need to be able to push and get the information that's relevant for your job and for your organization, making sure that you have the right fit.
So have a script, but don't stick to the script.
Well, you're having a conversation. So
right.
You should take advantage of having the conversation and asking the right questions. And asking, you know, when you interview someone, there's always a little bit of a gut feel. Don't be afraid to ask about those things. You know, maybe the person was just a couple of minutes late. And for interviews, if you're 5 minutes early, you're on time, right? You might want to ask about absenteeism, punctuality. And you might want to ask the referees about that. I mean, it's your opportunity to really get some good information. It's a nugget. It's a gift that's given to you, references. And try to get relevant references. Try to get relevant references. So get a supervisor, get someone who could speak to your candidate's employment. References that are over 10 years old are not really that relevant.
So what do you do in a situation where that someone has put forward references, but they're either 10 or 15 years old, or it's colleagues, but not what you would call relevant? How do you handle that?
You go back to the candidate. First of all, let me backtrack a little bit, because sometimes there's a reason why someone can't give a reference that's less than 10 years old. Maybe they've been in their same job for 10 years and they don't want anybody to know that they're looking for a reference. They can try to find people who have quit or who are no longer with the company. But sometimes if you want a supervisor reference, you might have to go over 10 years. But for the most part, you go back to the candidate and you say, we need three references. Two of them should be supervisors that are relevantly recent, less than 5 years old. Could you provide that? If not, why? Have a conversation with your candidate. You're going to be taking this person into your organization, so you may as well start the relationship now.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And so from the other side, if you're the individual who is going out there looking for a new job, maybe you still have a job, maybe you don't. But what can you do to make sure that the references you put forward are as helpful as they can be?
I love that question. No one ever asks that question. If you're the candidate, the best practice would be make sure you give your referees a heads up. I mean, it looks so bad on you if your future employer is calling somebody who no longer works at the job or who says, who? I don't know who you're talking about. So give them a heads up. Make sure they're available. Make sure that they're not in China for 6 months, and they're available to speak about you. And sometimes people are uncomfortable about it. So that's the best thing you can do. Make sure that the names and the numbers are clear. The numbers are correct and that the email is correct.
Right.
And if you're a candidate, you might want to call your referees and say, I'm going to give you as a reference. Would you mind? What type of thing would you say about me? Mm-hmm. And that's okay.
Okay. I was about to ask you, I don't think there's anything wrong with doing that. So I'm glad you've confirmed that.
It's a good thing. I mean, if you want the job, you want people to speak for you in a good light. I mean, we're all human, and if you're doing a good reference check, you're going to ask about growth areas. We all have them.
Yeah.
So just make sure that the candidate and the referee are on the same page. If your growth area is coming to work on time, that's maybe not somebody who you want to give as a reference.
If you're doing the reference check and you see that, Joe Smith worked at ABC Company from 2005 till 2015, so they're no longer there. It's not an issue about calling their current employer. And they've put forward two references, but you know somebody else at that company. Would you ever reach out to that other person?
No, I wouldn't. Even if I know them personally, legally, I'm only allowed to call the people that I'm authorized to call. Perhaps if you owned the company and you were having an and you were doing the hiring and you had an informal conversation with someone in the company, that would be a different story, as long as you're not putting the candidate's current job at jeopardy. However, me as a third party reference checker, I am only allowed to speak with the people that we've been authorized to speak with.
Okay. And I think you said earlier that if there are obvious gaps, if they've given colleagues but not a supervisor, you would go back to the candidate?
I mean, I would. I would ask my clients, I would say to my clients, look, you only have colleagues. You need to have one supervisor. Personally, when I'm doing a reference check, depends upon the job, but I like to see a supervisor, a colleague, either a subordinate or a client to get a real 360 on how the candidate performs. I mean, if it is an entry-level job, you might want to have two past supervisors. It's okay to have some volunteer experience. Someone who really could speak to your soft skills. Because that's what you're looking for. You're looking for a cultural fit. You're looking for someone who's going to work well in your organization. If your organization is siloed and you have someone who's really very extroverted and needs to be talking to people all the time and bouncing ideas off of them, they might not be a good fit for your organization. And it doesn't make them a bad candidate. It just means that they're not a good fit for your organization. Or if you have found someone who has the skill sets that you really need for your organization, but they need constant recognition, you know that that's what you need to do to manage them and to bring them along. It's a nugget. It just helps you ensure that you have the right candidate and how to support them and that they are the right fit for your organization.
Now, you said something interesting that made me think as you were talking there, because I know, you're the third party, so you're hiring for your client.
Right.
And maybe I'm wrong, but my assumption is usually you'll be told, look, we need someone for this position. They need to have this degree, this many years of experience, et cetera, et cetera. But how do you find out the type of personality, the type of culture that they have, so you can make sure it is the right fit?
Well, that's a very good question also. We're a pretty small organization, so we know the client, we know our clients, but it's not for me to make the decision on, I don't have to make the hiring decision. So we ask open-ended questions and we provide a full report. And then our clients can take a look at all three references and hopefully get a picture of the candidates and see if it corresponds with the person that they met. And then they make a decision. I mean, I have done references for people that I think are just really terrible candidates, and my clients have hired them anyways. It's I have no say in the hiring.
And have those worked out?
Yeah, some have and some have not. We have recently done someone, an excellent candidate who we found out was very systems and process driven, and was hired. He was a library technician, and he was hired into a position where they wanted him to implement the processes. And he was so unhappy at the company's disorganization that he didn't even last 3 months. So,
interesting.
You mentioned degrees. Can we talk about degrees for a minute? Because I find that that's what most people lie about.
Oh, yeah. Well, then go ahead.
I think it's a lot of my clients don't check about post-secondary education degrees. It's something that's very easy to verify. And I find that a lot of people will put that down that they have a degree if they're missing a credit. Or if I can tell a story about a candidate, a little bit of an antidote, I had a candidate who said he had an MBA. And we went back to the university. Every university has their own process. We followed the process of the university. We did not hear back from the university. I followed up with the registrar's office. I've been doing this a long time, so I have my contacts at different places. And they said, well, we're going to put you through to Comp Ed. So this candidate neither had his MBA or his undergrad. We spoke to Comp Ed, who said that he had one course in business management. He didn't even finish the certificate. Went back to the client and said, this guy lied. And he said to the client, well, your reference checkers are just a bunch of dinkwads, which is, you know what, it's possible. It's possible that mistakes happen. So I said to the client, have the candidate scan his degree, and I will go back to the university, and I'll ask them to validate it. And that was it. He withdrew his candidacy.
So you called his bluff, basically.
But it happens all the time. But people don't see the need to verify education. If you don't need the degree and someone says they have it, you want to make sure that you're hiring someone who's honest.
Well, it's a matter of honesty and trust. And mm-hmm. It's a great point, and people need to check references. The other thing I've seen happen is that someone said either they have a certain degree or they have a certain experience, and of course the employer doesn't check, and 2 or 3 or 5 years later they find out it wasn't true. And then they call me and they want to fire them. And I mean, I can tell you there have been a couple of cases like this. And essentially what the judges have said is, if it was that important that they had the degree, you should have figured out, you know, before 5 years have gone by, that they didn't have it. And if they were able to work with you without any issue for 2, 3, 5 years, obviously the degree is not that important. So my point is that do the checks, as you said, right away, confirm the references. Because otherwise, if you find out later they were lying, it's really not going to make a difference. You can't. A lot of employers are quick to jump on this idea of dishonesty in the application process. We're going to fire them, which is fine if you're a week in. But if you're a year or 2 or 5, it doesn't matter at that point. Now, on that note, if you can comment on this, hopefully you can keep it anonymous. What's the most interesting experience you had when checking references?
Well, that MBA one was quite interesting. And I have had people say very inappropriate things to me. Because we do our references on the phone, there's an air of anonymity, mm-hmm. and people seem to feel comfortable to say what they want. And you can only, I mean, certain things you just can't put in writing, so I have to call my clients and just tell them about it. There was another story about a gentleman who said that he had a MBA from Ryerson, and we checked. And one of the things that it was a conditional offer, so we had his date of birth, but he provided his student number and his name. Now, his date of birth did not match with his student number. And he had provided his cousin's student number. His cousin had the same name as he did. They had a different middle name. And he didn't, this gentleman, this candidate, never even went to Ryerson.
Did you call him on it?
Well, I it's not for me to speak to the candidate. I did call my clients and say, hey, this is what happens.
Yeah, that's I've heard a few stories like that. And I've also heard you can buy fake degrees and fake references online. Have you ever had that experience where you found out that a reference was fake?
I have been able to uncover friends. You know, sometimes people will make someone up and say, you know, this is my reference and it's a friend. Or I've even had a candidate who was her own referee and she gave a fake name. And then you start asking a lot of open-ended questions and you're on the phone with someone for like 15 minutes and things become obvious. I mean, stories unravel. They are not consistent with what's going on the resume. They're not consistent with what they said a minute earlier. So if you pay attention, you can usually figure it out.
Yeah. Well, and I think the bottom line is people have just got to put the effort and the time into doing the reference checks because you are hiring and we know the cost of hiring and the cost of replacing a bad hire. So it's critical. So two things I want to do. One is I'll remind everyone, if they have questions, please, you know, feel free to post them on Facebook or tweet to at Rudner Law. But also, and I know we, again, time flies by. In 2018, I think we'd be quite remiss if we didn't talk about social media in the context of reference checks. So how do you use social media? What do you think? And where have you seen people get themselves into trouble?
I'm of two minds with that. You know, it's really where do you draw the line between privacy and how far can a company check into your personal lives? And then also, I mean, I tell my kids' friends, be careful what you post, because once you post something, it's there. Mm-hmm. You're also, as an employer, I mean, there's just so many things to be aware of. As an employer, and you're checking social media, you might come across something that you don't necessarily need to know about your candidate. And if you don't hire them, there might be repercussions, you know, religious views. You know, you don't need to know about that in their workplace. And then, you know, and then you want to tell people if you're looking for, don't post this stuff. Just don't post this stuff. So I'm really of two minds, you know, how far can an employer go to not hire someone about their own personal thoughts?
Yeah. Yeah. And you hit one of the, so I was going to say, you hit one of the dangers that I always comment on. In my view, social media, it's public, it's fair game. But you're right, you can stumble upon things that you don't want to know, and primarily because of human rights issues. You don't want to know about their religious views, about their fact they're trying to get pregnant, that they're being treated for cancer, because then you might have the best of intentions, and you might hire somebody else because they're the best candidate. But if the person finds out that you knew that they were undergoing cancer treatment or trying to have kids, it's very easy for them to say that was the reason, or at least part of the reason, why you didn't hire them. And then the onus then falls upon you to prove a negative, to prove that wasn't the reason, which is very hard. So I'll tell you, and I know we got to wrap up very, very soon, but I'll tell you what I advise our clients. Have the social media checks done, but have it done by a third party like yourself, and you can then filter out all the irrelevant information, and you give them a report which comments on anything that's relevant to the job or to their fit. But you don't tell them anything about religion, cancer, children, family, et cetera, et cetera. So if they're ever cross-examined, they can quite honestly say they had no idea.
Good point. It's a good point.
Claire, one thing I do want to do before I let you go, I mentioned that 8 years ago that I had the privilege of interviewing you on a very short-lived online show called Canadian HR Law. And we were talking, of course, about references. And I asked you about what I said was at the time a growing concern about the increasing prevalence of no references policies. So I think, Rob, you can play that clip from 8 years ago, and then I'll see if your answer's changed at all.
Okay.
And I've spoken and written quite a bit on why I don't think that's a good policy in most cases. But what do you as a reference checker do when you come up against that?
It's very common, first of all, and it's a very big frustration because most organizations want to get references for their own candidates or incoming employees. But really, the onus is on the candidate. They should be aware of the company that has a no reference policy.
By the way, I don't think either you or I have aged a bit in 8 years.
We just look marvelous, don't we?
Absolutely.
We've had each other for a long time, Stuart. In terms of the no reference policy, I have to tell you that my thought remains the same. More and more companies have a no reference policy. They want references for their candidates. They don't want to give references. We try to get around it. We will ask the referees if they will give us personal reference. We'll call them on their own personal time. We'll call them after hours if need be. Sometimes they will tell us that they can't proceed. They don't want, it's company policy and they can't proceed. And I'll say, okay, before I let you go, will you just tell me, would you rehire the candidates? If they answer yes, it's usually positive. If they answer no, you know, it might be a flag. Not necessarily, but it might be a flag. Look, you have to look at the whole picture. You have to look at other references.
Yeah, it makes good sense. And I'm going to come back to this topic when I get to Fire Away in a couple of minutes. But Claire, let me thank you for coming on to Fire Away. I really appreciate it. Your insight 8 years later was more interesting to me because things have changed, but most things really haven't, despite the fact that technology has evolved. So thank you. And please remind everyone how they can get in touch with you if they'd like to talk to you.
Thanks so much for having me. This has been a lot of fun. You can reach me at Claire, C-L-A-I-R-E, at References and More Services, info@referencesandmoreservices. Check out our website at www.referencesandmoreservices. And thank you. It's been great.
Great. Thanks again. Okay. All right. And again, feel free to reach out to Claire if you ever need assistance with references and more, as her company is. And now I guess I get the chance to fire away myself. So unlike the previous two episodes where I was talking about the Me Too movement, we've moved on to something else today. And as I asked Claire a minute ago, this is a pet peeve of mine. And apparently it's been a pet peeve for at least 8 years because 8 years ago, I was asking her about this growing concern about no references policies. And it's just even more prevalent right now. It's a pet peeve because, and especially when I'm working on a file and either I'm working for the employer or the employee, and we're trying to reach some sort of resolution, and in some cases, the refusal to provide a reference becomes an impediment to settlement. I like that expression. I'm going to have to use that more often. But that becomes the last issue. We've resolved all the other ones, all the money, which is usually the biggest one. And now we can't get past this. And what baffles me, and Claire, I know I've heard Claire say this before. She may have said this again today. People want references when they're hiring. And yet, for some reason, they won't give them when they're not hiring, which doesn't make any sense to me. And what I will say is this, the whole no references policy as a blanket policy doesn't make any sense to me. There are certainly situations where you're not going to want to give a reference, and that's fine. But as an overall policy, it doesn't make sense. And this is one area where I think HR and employment lawyers are not on the same page. My team and I work with HR day in and day out. And for the most part, it's a pretty symbiotic relationship. We tend to see things the same way. We tend to be aligned as against others in organizations. In this case, though, it's quite remarkable. And it was about 3 or 4 years ago. Some viewers may know I'm the founding director of a course called HR Law for HR Professionals offered by Osgood. And it was about 3 or 4 years ago, we had a panel of employment lawyers. At the end of the day, we had an open Q&A session. The issue of references came up, and we had four lawyers, myself included, up at the front saying, there's no reason to have a no reference policy. Give references in most cases, except where there's good reason. And we had a room full of about 35 or 40 HR people, all of whom were sitting there shaking their heads at us. And they all said, we don't, we can't, we won't. And it just seems to be getting worse and worse in terms of this disconnect. So I'll say this, I had a couple of points I wanted to make, and I just don't want to forget any of them. First of all, from a practical perspective, as I said, everybody wants a reference when they're hiring. So why would you not give them? Second of all, if you're talking about a situation where someone's been in your company for 20 years and they're let go because of a downsizing or restructuring, nothing to do with them personally, no fault of their own, why would you not give them a reference to help them find new work? So that's the practical aspect and perhaps the ethical aspect. From a legal aspect, there is no reason for this widespread fear that we have. I know that a lot of it is driven from the US, where they are far more litigious than we are. I get that. And I understand that when it comes to making negative comments, people are pretty skittish. I can understand why most of us have been brought up to say, you know, if you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all. We've all been told that. We've all seen the multi-million dollar defamation claims, again, largely out of the States. So people are scared to make a negative comment. What I can tell you is this. If you make a negative comment in the context of a reference check, if you are honest, if you act in good faith, you will not be exposed to liability. And this has been the case for many, many years. And there was a decision out of the Ontario courts last year, which confirmed it. The case was Papp and Stokes, where a reference check was done and the responding employer gave a negative reference and they were sued for defamation. And the court clearly, the judge clearly agreed that the comments were defamatory in the sense that they were negative and gave a negative impression about the individual. And they were publicized, i.e. communicated to more than one person. But in their defense, what the employer said was A, it was true, and B, because we were giving a reference, we have a qualified privilege. And what that means is that as long as you're acting honestly and in good faith, you will not have or not be found to be liable for the comments you make. And no liability was found in that case, which I think is really important. A lot of people assume that they cannot say anything negative in today's day and age. That's not the case. But be honest about it. Don't stretch the truth. Don't make things up. And I've seen this happen where somebody was fired for a breach of a policy and they applied for another job and the potential employer called the former employer to find out what happened. And the former employer, for reasons only they will be aware of, lied and said that they engaged in theft. So, of course, the person wasn't hired. Don't do that. Be honest, act in good faith, but also tell the truth. You know, there's no reason not to. So that's for a negative reference. What I really want to talk about is positive references, because let's keep it in perspective. The vast majority of terminations in Canada are without cause. They're often restructuring, reorganization, downsizing. It's not because of the person, it's because of external factors. And yet employers have this policy where they will not give references. They will only give a confirmation of employment, the name, rank, and serial number, as I often call it. No good reason. And I've asked countless people, why? Why would you be scared? And the explanation I've been given, and I'm happy if anybody else has a better one, feel free to email me or send to me in any of the ways we've talked about. But the explanation I've been given is that they're scared that if they give a positive reference and the potential employer relies upon that, hires the individual, and the individual turns out to be a dud or even worse, engages in theft or other misconduct, that employer is going to turn around and sue them for misrepresentation. So I can tell you, when this was first explained to me about 5 or 6 years ago now, I had a student do the research. There was not one successful claim on that basis in Canada. I admit I haven't done the research lately, but I'd be shocked if there has been one since then. There is no reason to be concerned that you'll be sued successfully for a positive references. So keep that in mind. Keep in mind that when you're hiring, you want the references, so you should be giving them. And keep in mind one other thing too. You have a motivation as the former employer to help your former employee find new work. As most people will know, people who have lost their job have a duty to mitigate their damages, i.e., make reasonable efforts to find new work. If they find new work, their entitlement to severance is going to be reduced. So you have an opportunity here to cut your severance costs, help them find new work, give them references, consider outplacement counseling. And also, when you're going to give the severance package, consider a package that is based upon salary and benefit continuance with a clawback. A clawback is if they find new work, their entitlement is reduced or eliminated altogether. Now you've got all the motivation you need to help them find new work. So I'll really encourage everyone, reconsider their no references policy, scrap the policy, and just take every situation on its own individual merits. If there's a good reason not to give references, so be it. But in the vast majority of cases, there won't be a good reason. So there's my 2 cents worth. You got it here for free today. Thank you very much, everyone, for tuning in. Thank you again to Claire for being our third guest on Fire Away. And just a few closing comments before we wrap up. First of all, if you have any questions or any suggestions for future topics, tweet them to @RudnerLaw or post them on our Facebook page or on YouTube. Next month, we'll be broadcasting on May 15th, again at 12:30. We'll be talking about Bill 148, which I'm sure should get a lot of attention. And I'm actually quite excited. We have C. Michael Mitchell, one of the two authors of the report which led to Bill 148. He'll be joining us, so it should be a really interesting conversation. Lastly, I will say this. Rudner Law, as you can probably tell, believes in education. We provide a lot of information online. We have, of course, this show, our Twitter feed, our newsletter, which you can sign up for, our Facebook page, our LinkedIn page, etc. But please remember that none of this replaces legal advice. If you think you might need an employment lawyer, you probably do. So feel free to reach out to us. And one of my favorite memes that I've seen on Facebook recently is, please don't confuse your Google search with my law degree. So if you think you might need an employment lawyer, reach out to us. We'll be happy to talk to you. If we can help, great. If we can't, no harm done. So thanks, everyone. Thank you, Claire. Thank you, Rob, for keeping this organized as usual. And have a great day, everyone.